Hey guys, it's Alex Kessler, host of this podcast. Today's episode is actually brought to you by the Grimoire Deck Box, and the guys at Wizardry Foundry are giving it to you for a nice sweet 15% off if you go to the website and enter the code MMCASTMARCH2. You can get 15% off. That's the sweet Grimoire Deck Box. They're leather bound fancy books. You get to keep all your games in them. I actually do more other games than maybe even necessarily Magic, but you do Magic, board games, all the whole thing. They're really cool. They go on your bookshelf. They look super sweet. Check them out, and I'll hear you right after the intro music.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mod.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host.
Were you just trying to do like? Were you
Batman?
Trying to
do old, I was doing Batman,
but you were doing Christian Bale Batman.
Yeah, Christian Bale Batman. I can't do new Batman.
No, because
I don't have the baritone voice.
You don't have a robotic larynx.
I'm not a bad movie.
Have you saw it?
Yeah, it's not good.
I didn't like it. We can't talk about it though.
Yeah, this is not the podcast.
This is not the podcast to spoil it and make it bad.
I mean, I guess
people.
We could talk about it at the very end.
No, we shouldn't. It just came out. We should let people see
people
it.
Tweet at us if you want it. No, yeah, at the very end you say spoiler section and then we talk about it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
This is the Masters of Modern podcast. Welcome to it, guys. We're on rocketgem.com.
I'm your host, Alex Kessler.
And I'm your co-host, Ben Bateman. Yeah. Welcome back to the show. It's been a week, but it feels like it's been longer because
it's been a week and a half because we recorded and we'll talk about that, the March Walker Madness Planeswalker ranking of all time 2 weeks in a row.
Exactly. So yeah, we're back. We've got
I was in Hong Kong for a week.
Yeah, I just was working.
It's like
my job.
It's like 5 a.m. for me.
Yeah, wow. So you're just recovering from jet lag now.
Yeah. Excellent. I like fall asleep on the podcast.
Yeah.
Or just not talking like Batman.
Guys, if we sound more echoey than you're used to, it's because we're in a great hall surrounded by chalices.
Pillars, big cement pillars.
Surrounded by chalices of mead.
Lots of mead.
Yeah.
So much mead.
So
this has been us like, I feel like it's going from like weird voices to NPR.
Yeah.
Calm.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a little while. We have a sister podcast. They're called The Command Zone. They're on rocketjump.com also. Jimmy and Josh, they make
a thing like about not magic content at the end of episode. So we should talk about Batman versus Superman at the end of this.
All right. Well,
remember that one time where we almost had a Batman TV show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We know we did for two. We did two episodes
of it. It's probably still on the internet.
It totally is. You guys can find it if you're interested.
The first like two episodes of Gotham.
Yeah. It's called Gotham's Finest, which is a fantastic after show name.
Yeah.
Really good. And it's the three, me and Andrew, who does the action movie show with me, and Kessler.
Yep.
And we're sitting in like a room that we had built like a Batman set. And it was like, unlike after shows that I do now that are on a TriCaster with a live engineer switching between cameras, we literally had to shoot it with multiple cameras and then edit it down right afterwards.
Yeah, that was
and
not
stay
fun.
Up all night editing it. It was like a disaster, but it was very fun and it got me into hosting. So
yeah.
Anyway, back to what we were talking about that is magic related. So,
March Walker Madness, for those who don't know, on Twitter.
Well, before we get into March Walker Madness, I know you guys are interested, but there's two things I want to point out. And the first one is we're on Twitter. So
that tails into it.
Okay, and yeah, you can find out about
this is basically an advertisement for Twitter.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. And then the second one is we have a Patreon. We have a Patreon that you guys are being generous to support, and it's because Kessler and I are starting to do more content. We are working on video content. We've done a live streaming cast,
which we'll be doing next Monday.
A bonus episode, another one that's going to be bonus next week. So there's going to be lots of fun extra stuff, and you're going to the swag box members who paid for their swag boxes should be getting their mats like within the next week, which is the first item you get when you sign up for the swag box level Patreon.
I actually know what we're sending out for the second item.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are we going to break the news at the end of the show?
Yeah.
Patreon.com/the MMCast. Go and find out about the levels and what you can do to help us make you guys more content. Let's talk about March Walker Madness.
All right, March Walker Madness. So those who don't know, the last 2 weeks, we recorded episodes that counted down all 64 modern legal planeswalkers. Technically, I guess it was 61, and then they spoiled 4 new ones that we mentioned.
Yep.
The new ones from Shadows of Vanishrad that we'll also be reviewing during the live cast next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, oh, wait, it's March Madness, that time of year where all of the NCAA makes billions of dollars off of a bunch of free working students in the country.
And that's not at all the conversation that was had, but Kessler's commentary on the NCAA competitive system is now there.
Yeah. why don't we put these guys in a bracket and have them all fight each other over Twitter voting? So all you guys on Twitter have been voting for which Walker you like more. And we're now, as of when this cast comes out, we'll be finishing round two.
Maybe the third bracket day or the fourth bracket day?
It's been like the fifth.
We did. No. I mean, of round two.
It'll be the second day of round two. Round two will be 2 days.
Okay, gotcha.
And then round three will be 1 day, and then we'll 1 day from that point on.
Yeah.
So we'll be in the middle right now. Go vote. That's round three.
Yeah. That's at the MMcast on Twitter. Start a Twitter if you don't have one, just so you can vote and follow us.
It's really important.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at Kes Wiley, but at the MMcast is where it's important. But we do want to mention, you know, some exciting results. We have I think a total of 3 Cinderella stories going on.
Okay.
Arlen Cord, new Planeswalker.
Yeah, people are excited about Arlen Cord.
Kicked out the number 9 slot, Garrick Wildspeaker today or yesterday.
Yeah, there's just no love for Garrick Wildspeaker. That's just always been the case.
Elsbeth's Sun's Champion is currently beating Tezzeret the Seeker.
Yeah, Pete, Sun's Champion's good, and we talked about that a lot, how that's sort of one of the... That's like maybe the most powerful 6-drop planeswalker, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, less like the new Sorin does stuff, but he got kicked out, so we're not talking about
him. He's really good.
Yeah, he's really good. But that's less of a... It's like the 16 seed or the 17 seed. They're okay, like, yeah, it's not that big of a Cinderella story. The other one is Tamiyo, the Moon Sage.
Beat Venser?
No, is beating Liliana, Heretical Healer.
Heretical Healer and Wildspeaker were like two that were on the fence for us when we made the rankings in the first place.
24 seed was... We didn't make the rankings. It was card sign. Actually, now... Well, the cool thing is I actually ranked.
Yeah.
I'm now going to rank and we'll post them. We won't do an episode on it. But
right.
Using the scores that the Planeswalkers get in their voting against the people they're voting against, I'm re-ranking all of them.
That's pretty clever.
So we'll see how they change. And it'll be cool. This is for all of our Twitter followers. This is a special little Twitter event.
Yeah, I don't think Arlen Cord, I guess none of those upsets really surprised me all that much, you know?
Arlen Cord is new, and yeah.
Yeah. It was a fun exercise to rank all the Planeswalkers. I enjoyed it very much. So...
Who do you think's going to win it?
It's either going to be Jace Springs Prodigy or
your top
or
4 now, and the top 2 and the 1. So you think it's going to be Lily versus Jace?
I would say Lily versus Jace, if it's possible that the bracket can play out that way.
Then it's made that way, yeah.
I believe it'll be Lily versus Jace. I think the top 4 will be Lily, Jace, Karn, and...
I think it's going to be Ugin.
You think Ugin's going to make 4? Didn't Ugin I make us knock Ugin down to like 5 or 6 because I was like so disgusted?
No, you made us put Ugin at like 11th.
No, definitely not that low.
I have the seed. I can look it up.
That's definitely incorrect.
I'm looking it up right now.
I know that
Ugin's everyone
it was like 6th.
Ugin is the 7th seed.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Okay.
who's our number 4, though? Karn was 3, and then the 4th?
Elsbeth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Knight Errant.
Okay. I mean, that's what I think the top 4 is going to be.
Ugin's been beating every single person he's playing by like 96%.
So you think Ugin's going to end up in top 4?
Yeah, he's like winning. Him and Liliana are winning at just like, oh, we're beating every person just blatantly, just slapping him to the ground.
All right.
Jace, I think, has a harder road to the top because people hate him.
Yeah. True enough. It's so weird that people hate that card. That card's so good.
Well, they hate him because of Mind Sculptor and he's Jason.
He's been
good 1,000 times. And
yeah. Speaking of Mind Sculptor being awesome, there's that audio series that Sean Penrod is working on producing right now. Right? You know, and he's doing like the magic story and he's like doing full on like people in recording studios.
Oh, that's the bonus episode next week, huh?
Well written, is it?
Or the bonus episode for April will be us doing story lore.
Yeah. He's doing a whole thing like involved with like voice actors and I got a message from him because I had talked about wanting to be Jace in the magic movie.
Oh, nice.
And he was like, when I'm casting Jace, if you want to read for Jace, I'll let you audition.
Did you read?
Well, he hasn't cast for Jace yet.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he hasn't come in the story yet.
But
I was like, I'll absolutely read. No, just kidding.
Is that your Jace voice?
No,
it's not. That's kind of like a Voldemort.
It's not my Jace voice. Not at all.
Is it my Batman voice?
We're just getting way too silly now.
All right, so what are we talking about today?
We are talking about the history of modern bannings.
Why? Is there some ban list announcement that's really relevant to the modern format coming out?
There's an impending modern ban that we have talked about at length. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to the beginning of modern.
And we're going to talk back in time.
Each ban announcement, because they've killed like a half dozen decks now.
I'm going to talk the Back to the Future theme song, though.
Yeah, okay.
No, I did it already.
They've killed like a half dozen or more decks now since Modern's inception, and we wanted to sort of just break down the reason behind each one, a little bit of some of the cards and what they did that
was
impressive.
Where Magic was leading up to it, what they did wrong, what they could do right, why Wizards does the things they do.
So big shout out to Mike, Mike Clarium, our buddy, who we call Steam Shovel, and he actually, I was texting with him earlier today, and he actually suggested this topic. I told him I thought we were going to maybe do our set review, but we might do it next week. And he suggested this. I thought it was a really good idea. So I know he listens to this podcast, and big shout out to you. Let's start from the beginning. I was like the
10 cards that were banned when it first opened. That's where we should start.
After the first Pro Tour.
No.
Oh, you want to actually talk about the ban list?
Okay. Just to give people a status of where we're at.
When I'm reading this, and it's like the way it's listed, and here in this list, in MTG Salvation, it feels like this is the opening narration to Terminator 2, when she's like, date, 1997.
Yeah, no, you have to read
Skynet
it like that.
Yeah.
I want everyone to imagine.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
It's
not Linda Hamilton doing it. I'm thinking about the part later where Schwarzenegger is talking to Edward Furlong, and he's like, August 17th, 1997, Skynet becomes operational.
Yeah, yeah, do it that way.
Yeah, No,
do it in your Arnold voice. It's too late. It's done.
All right.
If he doesn't do it in the Arnold voice, everyone yell at Ben on Twitter.
I will record, if anybody is interested, I will record anything you want in my Schwarzenegger voice, because like when I really practice, I think it's pretty refined, but I'm not going to do it right now.
The people want it, Ben. Do it.
No. So, okay. All right. August.
What about the very end after we do our Batman review?
I'll do like a couple Schwarzenegger lines.
Okay.
Some of my favorites. I'm here. Come on, do it. Kill me now. All right, I'll do some more.
He did it.
2011. 2011, August.
It's been a weird episode.
Modern. 2011, August. Modern becomes a sanctioned paper format from an online format. The initial ban list is Ancestral Vision, Ancient Den, Bitter Blossom, Chrome Mox, Dark Depths, Dread Return, Glimpse of Nature, Golgari Grave Troll, Great Furnace, Hypergenesis, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Mental Misstep, Seat of the Synod, Sensei's Divining Top, Skull Clamp, Stoneforge Mystic, Sword of the Meek, Tree of Tales, Umezawa's Jite, Valakut, the Molting Pinnacle, and Vault of Whispers.
So that's basically like an all-star list of the cards that made Standard miserable over the history of Standard, with a little bit of a sprinkling of cards that are too good in Legacy probably, so they knew they probably needed to get rid of them.
Yeah, there were some cards in there. There are some cards on this list that we will never see in Modern. Some cards that are very clearly ridiculous. We'll just never see them. Skullclamp, you're never going to see that card in Modern.
Yeah.
It seems absurd that you would ever see Hypergenesis.
Not legal in Legacy, you're probably not going to see in Modern.
You're not going to see Jite, like Chrome Mox, Dark Depths. Just,
someone made an argument for Jite to be legal on Channel Fireball. I was like, you...
That card's just preposterous. It's like so oppressive.
It sounded more like someone who hasn't, because they're maybe a pro and haven't played Legacy anytime recently, like, oh, that card seems fine. What's that going to do?
Yeah, that card's very frustrating. So that is what started. So then they had the first Modern Pro Tour, and this was like the very Wild West of Modern. In the beginning,
Cloud Post was the main deck that everyone had to beat.
Yeah.
Zoo was a huge deck in the format, was Storm.
It's funny, too, because I have all these memories of that year when Modern was first announced. And remember John Van Druten before he moved away?
Yeah.
So I used to go with like John and Claude, who was our buddy, who was back.
Also moved away.
Yeah, he's back in Europe now. We would go to like this Denny's, and we'd print out all these proxies, and we would mess around playing practice matches. And I built all these rogue decks. And this is like the beginning before I actually understood like what you had to do to be good in Modern, because it had just launched.
Right.
Like in theory, I got.
No one really fully knew. It's just people knew the obvious decks that had targets on their back.
I mean, I was building like Academy Researchers with Eldrazi Conscription, and I was building like weird stuff that I was just like trying to find a way to make it work. So we all messed around with that for a while, and then the first Pro Tour happened, and Splinter Twin happened. But Splinter Twin with Ponder and Preordain legal and Modern happened.
Yep.
And not just that, but you could discard Reaper King or Progenitus to Blazing Shoal on an Infect creature and just win outright on turn two easily.
Because that was a different deck. And then you had Cloud Post, which you used the Cloud Post, the Cloud.
Yeah.
The Glimmer Post and Cloud Post, which...
The Locust Lands.
Generates a ridiculous amount of mana really quickly.
Yes.
Kind of like Tron, but a little bit more aggressive.
Earlier version of Tron, you had
Green
Sun.
It's like an aggressive Tron.
Green Sun Zenith, which made green decks all very homogenous. It made playing Wild Nacatl and Green Sun Zenith together with Dryad Arbor. Just was very...
Yeah.
It made games feel very much the same at all times. And then Rite of Flame was just too obviously made Storm decks too consistent. So they decided,
right.
Which is funny, there's been two Storm bannings.
So what were the cards banned from that first banning?
So Blazing Shoal, Cloud Post, Green Sun Zenith, Ponder, Preordain, and Rite of Flame.
Sure.
Every single one of those bannings, in retrospect, I think is correct. The only one on there now, looking back, that I think you could maybe make an argument more is Green Sun Zenith.
I could see Preordain being unbanned.
I guess now that Splinter Twin's gone, maybe. Except that Seer Visions is already like such a played card. It's like so played already, and it's
sure.
But I mean, granted,
there are more Preordains out there, so it kind of fixes their like Ponder or Seer Visions is too expensive problem without having to reprint it in a modern set.
If you ban, you're saying you'd ban Seer Visions, right?
No, No, it's like
you have them both legal. Have them both,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it seems like a bad idea.
It just makes Delver good, which is fine. Delver's not good, so.
Yeah. So that was the first one. So the interesting thing was we went through in December, there was yet another banning.
Yeah, so what happened is the Pro Tour happened, banned a bunch of cards. Then the World Championship happened, and they banned Zoo basically out of the format.
Yeah, so what they did in that banning was they banned Punishing Fire and Wild Nacatl.
Which Punishing Fire makes sense. Punishing Fire basically makes it so creatures' decks can't survive.
For anybody that is wondering what that means, Grove of the Burn Willows, the very expensive land from Tron.
It's still expensive.
Which taps to add green or red, your opponent gains one life, or taps for a colorless, a waste mana. Punishing Fire is one red, one colorless, deals two damage to target player or creature, and
if you gain life, you can pay one red mana to put it back in your hand.
If your opponent gains life.
Yeah, sorry.
So what happens is it's in your graveyard, you tap, make them gain a life with the land, use the mana you've created to return it to your hand. And it's just endless shock.
It takes three mana to do it, but it's like very hard to disrupt. And like I don't think any time I've ever assembled it in any format, I lost.
No, it takes two mana to do it. Because you just tap it and it returns itself.
Yeah, but then it costs two mana.
To play it, you mean? Sure. Yeah, so that's... And then Nacatl has since been unbanned, but...
Sure. I think they overreacted with the Nacatl ban. I think they saw Nacatl is just really good, and it's... And like this is around... Like Green Sun Zenith was also really good in the deck beforehand, so it made Nacatl seem strong, and then Punishing Fire was actually the legitimate problem for the deck, and they were still trying to figure out how the format works, so they banned Nacatl unjustly.
Yes. Absolutely. So that was the initial like slate of bannings. And I think that there was some sense from people at that point that, okay, I can't play this format because everything good that I try to build is just getting ripped out from under me because it was aggressive. I mean, just that number of bannings.
Which I do think at that point is unfair because like the format is 6 months old. They're going to ban cards. Like they needed people to test with it and play in large numbers before they knew what was necessary.
Right. So I don't recall through the end of 2011 and into 2012 exactly what the most dominant decks were. If I recall, I think Jund was right up there.
Jund was really high. Blue-white decks in general were a little bit stronger back then.
Yeah, that's right. They had the Geist deck. The Geist deck with Snapcaster was the
Delver. American Delver was like an actual format player.
So was Teemer Delver.
Delver was a thing back then. I remember. Back then, it was a lot more decks that were being ported from other strong formats because people haven't had as much time to figure out what the best Pod build was. Like Pod was around, it just wasn't. Because what set is that?
Pod?
No. 2011, 2012.
That's probably right around that time. That's like should be right around New Phyrexia, I think. It might have been Innistrad, but Innistrad Block Constructed is listed here in March 2012. There was a banning for Block Constructed Innistrad, which means I think that was right.
No. So that was right after Dark Ascension. So because Modern hasn't existed without Snapcaster Mage and Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah.
So blue white decks, like Snapcaster decks and Liliana decks, basically are the two best decks in the format.
Yeah, I do. I recall like there was that World Championship where Finkel and those guys were all playing the blue white deck. And then there was, Zoo was the other big deck. Affinity was huge. Affinity's been huge since the beginning. Infect hadn't made an impact yet.
No, Infect wasn't a thing people realized could do stuff.
No, that wasn't good yet. People hadn't.
I mean, it was good, just people didn't figure it out.
People weren't playing eggs yet. It wasn't. Splinter.
People are still high on Storm. Storm, I think, was the most played deck for a while there, eventually.
One of the Pro Tours I played a lot, yeah.
Well, because not even just the Pro Tour on like Modo, because it was really cheap. It was a really inexpensive deck that had a pretty good game because it could win on turn three.
Yeah. So what ended up happening was we went into 2012 and the next year after people had complained about the previous December banning,
Return to Ravnica,
Valakut was unbanned, but there was no bannings in September. Sure. So that was a big deal because it was the first time that the format had existed where people actually got to experience, okay, rather than taking something away from me, you're going to make something more available to me to add Scapeshift as a deck. Oh,
we can
to
have
format.
Our toys back? Yay.
And that was exciting. Yeah. I remember there was a real feeling at that moment of stability with this, like, okay, I'm going to get to do this for a while.
Sure.
And so, but then of course, January of 2013, just 4 months later, Blood Red Elf and Seething Song are banned.
Right. And the world kind of understood Blood Red Elf at the time. At the time, Jund, because of Deathrite Shaman, was by far the best deck in the format.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the Pro Tour before when Deathrite Shaman first came out, it was like 55% Jund, and the Pro Tour GP, whatever was big right after around then, another 55-65% Jund at the Pro Tour. Because it was easy, safe, pros needed to know how to play it, and it had a pretty much good game against everyone. So they banned Blood Red Elf because Blood Red Elf was the problem when Jund was good and standard.
So I remember a couple things happening right around this time. This was right around, I think, GP San Diego. I think we were both there that year. And I recall Seething Song's banning I just remember kind of looking at everybody.
This is the first PTQ season I played Modern, like, through the season.
Yeah, I think so. I was playing Hunted Hands in the original version.
Because I remember doing really, really well with Jundin play, because I was playing a blue-white with Wall of Omens and just, like, had a really good game against Blood Raid Elf, and that, like, wasn't a problem.
That was, like, your Trinket Mage, Academy Ruins, like, Engineered Explosives deck.
Yeah, Teleria West. Yeah, not Trinket Mage. And then they banned it, and the deck just, like, fell apart, because it no longer was, like, oh, I can plan to play Jund for half of my rounds.
So I remember looking around and being like, Seething Song, huh? Like, interesting. Like, I guess online there must have been much more of a presence of Storm.
So Storm was a big problem online. And but a big problem is strong. It just was cheap and good. So people just jammed in two mans with Storm because it was easy and you can kind of go infinite by winning with it.
Right.
People in general thought this was a little unnecessary.
I remember
it was like a weird card to be unbanned. Storm wasn't winning any real, like, it was good, but it wasn't like oppressive in any way.
Yeah.
Wizards gave its like vague, oh, it wins some amount of times before turn four, and that's a problem, even though Storm kind of didn't do that all the time, and like still today kind of wins before turn two, doesn't.
So this is the two halves of the Modern ban problem that we've talked about at length on here before, and they defend the decision by the consistency of being able to win before turn four or lack of diversity. And this was one of those situations where the Storm banning was just like, this is a really loose before turn four.
Yeah, this is, I mean, like, what's interesting though, is that this has kind of been, when they ban things, this has been their major policy every single time. They ban the card that makes one deck too good.
Right.
And they ban the other card that makes a deck too quick.
So the thing we're forgetting to mention is that the previous Pro Tour, when we saw Jund was so good, it was because they had printed Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah, yeah, no. Till this day, I still say Bloodbraid Elf was banned unnecessarily. There's an argument to be made that Bloodbraid Elf being out of the format is allowing a multitude of different red, green, or black, or like mid-range four drops to be played that wouldn't, because Bloodbraid Elf would just tier them out.
And I like those four drops.
Fine. I do understand that argument that like choosing between Olivia or Garrick or Chandra or Arlancord now, like, there's an interesting choice to be made versus if Bloodbraid Elf is around, just know that choice is you play Bloodbraid Elf. But Deathrite Shaman was the problem.
I would be curious to see what the difference in the format now, if that was still the case, but I think it probably would be. The thing is, Deathrite Shaman, for any of you who are listening and never got to play with it, we've said it before, but it's the only one mana planeswalker that's insane that's ever been printed.
The only one mana planeswalker that's ever been printed.
Kithion, but I mean.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah,
right.
It's not really a planeswalker.
I keep forgetting about him.
It's a creature. But yeah, but, I mean, Deathrite Shaman is a one mana planeswalker. It's totally bonkers. If you've ever gotten to play with it, it's one of the most fun cards to ever play with.
It's really interesting because it's banned for the exact same reason Green Sun's Zenith is banned. A lot of people have made the argument that if you unban Green Sun's Zenith and ban Dryad Arbor, you'd be fine, because the problem with Green Sun's Zenith is that on turn one, it can ramp you.
Right.
But on turn 10, it's good. And Deathrite Shaman, no matter when you drew it in your curve, was at least going to help you stabilize, be a threat, or ramp you.
It was always good. And so this season, I remember playing Moonzoo in PTQs. I have a distinct memory of showing up, and it was a deck that played three Blood Moon main deck, Deathrite Shaman and Birds, the best creatures, you know, Nakadol, and, or you couldn't play Nakadol at that time, but like Curd Apes, I think, were probably in the deck and things like that.
Sure.
You know, Lightning Bolt. And I just remember that the point of the deck was crack a fetch land, resolve Deathrite Shaman, play turn two Blood Moon, and then just play the rest of the game. And like, you have your red, and now you have, you know, some number of lands that work, and you have like a Birds or something like that.
Sure, sure.
And it was really good. Yeah. It was a really good deck because that card's totally busted. So what happened was, after the Bloodbraid Elf banning, Seething Song didn't really make a difference. People still play Storm to this day.
Sure. No, I mean, like, it definitely depreciated.
Yeah, but people started experimenting with Electromancer, I remember.
Well, it just came out. I mean, no, that was kind of the reason Seething Song got banned, actually, I think, was that
Electromancer
pushed that deck over the top. What it became now is the enchantment when you have two cards of the same type in your graveyard.
Yeah, Pyromancer's Ascension.
Yeah, like more of a Pyromancer's Ascension Storm deck versus before where it was a...
Yeah.
And that deck is still good. I just played against it in League, and it's just like, it wrecks you.
So what happened was that after the banning of Bloodbraid Elf, all of a sudden, the Jund decks decided to adopt four color, and they just added white. And the reason they added white was for Lingering Souls, and they added white for Ajani Vengeant.
Yeah.
And so Ajani Vengeant became the four drop, and Lingering Souls just became just the busted 2-for-1 card, and you just played Deathrite Shaman, it fixed your mana, and all of a sudden Wizards was like, this is no more fun. It was like, for one tournament, it was like, oh, well, they get to play these fun cards. Look at this, Ajani Vengeant never used to see play, but like, that got real unfun real fast. I remember...
Our number five seed.
Yeah.
Just beat Ashiok Nightweaver into the.
Johnny Vengeance is really good.
He's really good.
I remember at Grand Prix San Diego that you're watching. Kibler was playing against somebody from Channel, and the guy he was playing from Channel was playing Eggs because Eggs
Holiday.
Hadn't been banned yet.
It was Nathan Holiday.
Yeah,
and he F6'd the turn. Well, we haven't even gotten the Eggs, but so because when Storm left, all of the Storm players turned to because that same Pro Tour Eggs won.
Austin.
Yeah. Well, the Pro Tour before the one in that fall, because this is the one there was like two, yeah. A Pro Tour and then GPs. After bannings, the Eggs won. Eggs won the Pro Tour.
Well, that's the next. So we're about to
end. And so when Storm got banned, a lot of the Storm players just audibled into Eggs because it played a very similar game plan and it was also relatively inexpensive.
If you guys want to make a good joke, tweet BachWiz18 at BachWiz18 and say, sorry about the bannings, bro.
Yeah. Do that. All of you.
So what happened was...
So Eggs, which is a deck just all about sacking artifacts, and it has this distinct problem of A, being hard to interact with, but B, taking 20-minute churns that could do nothing.
Yeah. So what I remember is watching at the GP, Kibler was playing this green-white deck. I think they were playing an early version of...
He was playing Big Naya. He was playing just...
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I was pretty sure that he was on the same... He was part of the same crew that was playing the green-white decks.
It was like the tournament that he did really well with... Dami Raid and the 4/4 that is beefy that you if you make for someone threes, discard
yeah.
it
yeah.
Okay. And it was
I guess what I was remembering is for some reason I was remembering those decks. Oh, maybe this was part of the white Jund decks. They were playing Aven Mind Censor. Is that what I'm
Everyone was playing Mind Censor.
Yeah, it just became like the card. So that was a weird time in Modern. It was one of those things where I think another banning was necessary. And so the next banning was correct. The next banning happened in May.
Yeah, it was Eggs. It was an emergency ban.
It was,
or not an emergency ban, but an emergency ban in the sense that they banned something out of Pro Tour schedule.
Yes, and they would have already banned Deathrite Shaman, but it was such a new card they wanted to give it a little more run first.
This is before Wizard. Like at this point, Wizards felt like, oh, the new card should stay unbanned for a while,
right?
Because we want people to play with our new fancy toys instead of realizing, which I think they've realized recently, is sometimes we print really powerful things that aren't too powerful in Standard, but Modern can't handle it.
Right. So Second Sunrise, after Stanislav Sifka beat. He didn't beat Shouta. He beat Yuya Watanabe in the Pro Tour that year. And Yuya was playing straight Jund and Sifka was playing Eggs. And Sifka was like a math or chess nerd, like just insane, like complete genius, like had jammed. And he didn't lose with Eggs at that Pro Tour. He did something like went like 17-0 or like 16-0 in matches or something.
Okay.
Something ridiculous. Like he ended up like losing a game in the finals or in one of the semifinals games or something like that. But I just remember watching and just sort of having this like crazy moment of like, man, this guy's like a chess master. He's like a grandmaster. He's like so smart. And he's just done the solitaire math on this so many times, that he was just flawless. And right. So Modern banned Second Sunrise in May.
And this was the first banning to follow really the top, mentality. So the reason Top is banned, which is Sensei's Divining Top,
yeah.
is it literally slows tournaments down to a crawl because almost every single Miracle player, this happens in Legacy, is in the draw bracket because the most players, unless they're extraordinarily efficient, don't time out every round because they don't play efficient enough in Top. You know, literally every single time your opponent does everything, if you have open mana, you're going to look at your Top.
Right.
So like... Eggs is the second time a card has been banned, more from a perspective of this is a tournament problem where tournaments can't survive on the schedules they're supposed to if this deck is available. Because the problem is Eggs, even after turns, so after the clock goes off, could take a 20-minute turn.
Right.
So it could be an entire hour and a half later while one person in the entire 500, you know, 2,000-person tournament is just waiting for this one person to just go off and not win.
Yeah, and that's sort of the whole idea is that you want to encourage people to go to tournaments and have fun, and it's not fun when you encourage them to go and like they have to play against that sort of thing. It's just that will discourage people from encouraging the game that they invest so much time and money into making better. So in February of the following year, in 2014, we're starting to get into sort of like
banning pre-Pro Tour or unbanning pre-Pro Tour schedule.
Yeah, and like modern. So in February of 2014, Deathrite Shaman is banned. Correct move. Fully correct move. Like yep. maybe the most busted Magic card. That might be the most busted Magic card printed in like the last 5 years.
No way.
Like that.
Treasure Cruise? Dig Through Time?
I think
No, Treasure Cruise is a bigger problem.
You think so?
Yeah. Right. Look at vintage.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, okay, okay. So it's
restricted in vintage. So,
okay. It's
Death Ride Shaman's legal in Legacy. Cruise and Dig Through Time are banned in Legacy.
Death Ride is at least like top 10. And it might
Sure. I'll give you top 10 in the last 2-5 years.
Yeah, it's gigantic. So Death Ride Shaman was banned. Now, they unbanned Bitter Blossom and Wild Mikado here. Mikado was a previous banning. We talked about it.
Yeah. It was probably a mistake.
It hasn't really done too much to the format since. I mean, people play Zoo.
Zoo is a deck that exists and it does okay, but it's nothing. Yeah. Like the thing with the format is like Lightning Bolt. It dies the Lightning Bolt.
I mean, it's no Scythe Tiger, but
everyone roll their eyes collectively with me right now. Let's take a moment of silence.
And then Bitter Blossom is another card that was since being unbanned. It added to the tokens decks. There are some
token
control decks
better,
that try
some
to play
decks
it.
Are better. It's a good sideboard card. The thing with it is. It would have been a problem in the format before Abrupt Decay.
Right.
But with Abrupt Decay, it's not a problem.
It's one of Kessler's favorite cards, and he will... This is one
of my favorite cards. I do like the card, though.
It exists in Kessler's Abzan decks in places that it sometimes doesn't exist in the stock lists. So I think you love that card.
It's really good with Gavinny Township and Lingering Souls.
No, that card's really good. I mean, Blue Blossom's super nuts. So that was the only banning or unbanning in the entirety of 2014. So now we get into last year.
What a great year, 2014.
Yeah, it was good.
Vengeance are more playable because Deathrite Shaman's gone.
So now
they reprinted Scavenging Ooze. I was playing Dredge and someone just like natural turn 2 Scavenging Ooze on game 1 because it was like a pod player. He's like, I literally can't beat that card. There's not a single card in my deck. I get wrecked.
Ooze?
Yeah, against with Dredgevine, you just can't beat it.
So good. So that summer happened and Khons was printed. And something happened when they printed Khons. They printed a couple cards. One of which was Jeskai Ascendancy.
Sure.
One of which was Treasure Cruise.
Well, there's two mechanics, really. They printed Prowess and Delve.
Yeah.
And Treasure Cruise.
This was a clear example of not testing for Modern. And this is like probably as clear an example that has ever existed.
I think Eldrazi is a worse example.
Maybe. Yeah, he could be right. Because
I think these cards, like, they knew and maybe they didn't know. But like I also think if you look at where that format ended up, right. It was actually pretty healthy. The GP before the Pro Tour where they banned cards had 8 different decks that were all doing different things.
Yeah.
The problem is that Treasure Cruise is just really good. I don't think Dig Through Time needed to be banned personally.
I've said that the whole time and other people have disagreed with me. I've always thought like Dig is like really good.
I think
like,
it's a problem in Legacy when you have Miracles and Miracles is a deck that's a problem. But in Modern, all it did was make Scapeshift really good. And now that Twin is gone, I don't like...
Yeah, it's true.
I guess you get to Blood Moon quicker.
I think that playing Dig in a deck like if you could still play Dig in those Grixis control decks, like that just like fill their graveyard
so fast.
That'd be great.
I'd be fine with that. I don't think there's a problem if there's a deck like Grixis that has good access to removal. I think that would actually fix a lot of people's problems with Modern, especially pros.
I just think like the card selection involved when your card velocity in those decks is like so good. I mean, just like think about the frequency with which you would start hitting Kolaghan's commands in the moments you needed them and getting those just busted
chains.
Sure, but
then that just means it's like Affinity and Infect are worse, and I'm not really in a world where I want them to be better.
All right, that's fair. I mean, yeah, agreed. I was at the time, I was the one
and like the counter that is Scapeshift X, then beat Grixis. Like, there's like a cool metagame that exists with Dig Through Time in the format that doesn't exist now.
I recall being on this podcast and saying I didn't think that they were going to ban Dig. And Andrew Brown was like, they're definitely banning Dig. He was definitely right, and he's definitely a pro, and I'm not. Well, I have one pro point, but let's move on.
I'm really good at shot calling things.
it's true. You're better at shot calling than I am being a pro. So that summer that got played a lot, there was a Jeskai Ascendancy deck. This podcast launched with you and Glenn, and that was one of the first episodes you did, was looking at Jeskai Ascendancy, talking about were those cards broken, and I think doing a Khons block review.
Our first set, actually our first ever set was kind of what this episode is. Our first ever episode was
history
kind of like a history of Modern Pro Tours.
Yeah.
And then the second one was our Khons review, and it was an episode where I definitely went on a rant on, guys, Jeskai Ascendancy is really good. This deck is a thing. And everyone's like, nah.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, no, no.
And I got pulled into this podcast like 7 or 8 episodes in, and that time period was like when people were really discovering just quite how busted that deck was. But the funny thing is at the same time, the Blue-Red Delver and the Jeskai Ascendancy deck were dominant. You had the pod deck, which had just like innocuously become the most consistent deck in Modern over the course of the year.
Basically, it took a while for them to kick Jund out of the format. This was a factor of two things. One, just every card they ever printed made Birthing Pod better.
Right.
Every creature card, because it's a new creature I can find. And B, Birthing Pod is a notoriously very difficult deck to play well.
Yeah.
It just because there are so many different playthrough lines that could go in so many different ways that it was hard to really master it. But once you did, it was legitimately the best deck in the format, probably through Modern, since it was printed in Modern.
Well, and there, you're forgetting the printing of one card that was just completely ridiculous for that deck, was that they printed Voice of Resurgence. And Voice was just a great card. And then the fact that, like, not only is it amazing if your opponent does anything at instant speed, but like you can just pot it away and get a token.
Or like a better creature, and you get a 3-drop, and you get Lingering Soul. Yeah, it's just really good.
You could just like pot it for Witness and get it back, and then replay it, and then repot it. Like it was just,
You also forgot, I guess, Swift Spear was the other card out of cons that got printed, and that's kind of the one that survived.
Yeah.
Of the four cards, it's the one that is still seeing a ton of play.
Jeskai Ascendancy survived. It just didn't.
It just didn't see any play. Because it ended up that Jeskai Ascendancy was basically just one of the best uses of Treasure Cruise.
Yeah.
And that was more why it was good and not any other reason.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like that and Delver were the two things. But back to Birthing Pod. So part of the other problem was that they introduced all these cards in cons. And they're really good, and they mix up the format.
Yeah.
But before that, the format had kind of stagnated.
Right.
Before cons came out, the format kind of was solved, and everyone figured out there was Twin and Birthing Pod and blah, 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 in fact. And we get to the Pro Tour, and they're like, okay, we have to ban these cards.
Yeah.
But if we ban these cards, the Pro Tour is just going to be what Magic looked like in August.
Yep.
So from that perspective, we need this Pro Tour to be interesting, and we can't ban things to make the format more boring than it is.
Yeah.
So we also have a policy where we want to make this exciting. What was the card that needs to go away?
Birthing
Pod was the card.
Yeah. Birthing Pod is too powerful. I think that Birthing Pod is probably to this day the most polarizing Modern ban. No. Splinter Twin is. But Birthing Pod for a different reason. Because
I think it's the same reason. It's just Birthing Pod.
It's like this. Twin, the argument, you can see the logic behind the argument because I guess you could still look at Birthing Pod and make an argument that Birthing Pod's a fair card in Modern, easily. Like, it isn't an unfair card. It's just a card that makes the
card. Have you ever played against or with the card? It's pretty unfair.
No, it's a really good card. I would say
it's more unfair than Splinter Twin.
Right. I mean, Twin has that thing going for it that I've always said, which is that it's a do-nothing 4-mana aura that you get 2-for-1, and it's not a good card. It just happens.
And it's weak to Abrupt Decay and or Path, where, like, Pod literally can't be killed by any main deck card in the format.
So whatever it is, I would say that those are pretty clearly the two most polarizing bans.
And I remember like straight up being like, this is what's going to happen. Like we were pretty confident. I said I wish Dig to the Time wasn't, but I can't see Wizards not just banning all these things.
Okay. Yeah, it's fair.
And then do they unban anything? I thought they unbanned something.
They did. Yeah. They unbanned Golgari Gravetroll.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it should have made the bigger impact, but it just didn't.
Yeah.
It just didn't.
But the real problem out of Dredge is still banned.
Yeah.
And it's the Sack 3 Creatures.
Dread Return.
Dread Return. If Dread Return was in the format, Dredge would be a tier 1 deck.
Yeah. So that is true. From that point on, we didn't get another Modern banning for a long time. We went.
A year.
And we went.
And exactly a year.
And we went.
Was it exactly 1 year?
It was exactly 1 year later.
was it exactly 1 year 3 months ago?
Yes. And it was Splinter Twin and Summer Bloom, the most recent banning.
Yeah. Summer Bloom was a fringe deck. It got like 16th or 19th place at a GP before sometime in the year before the Pro Tour. And then Sam Black and Justin
Cohen
just wrecked with it. They like took the tournament by storm. Justin Cohen made the joke of being like, oh, I'm not a good Magic player. I'm just good at playing
unfair things.
No, not even unfair. Just this deck.
So
and when he won, he was like, or when he like qualified for every Pro Tour ever, he was like, I now have to learn how to be good at Magic.
The hilarious part about this is that you go back to May of 2013 when they banned Second Sunrise, and you think about the fact that in May of 2013, every single card played in the Amulet Bloom deck was legal.
Right.
And like, that's what it takes, and that's why people are so...
There's the Gain 2 Lifeland.
Yeah, sure. Everybody, but... There was the white one. Oh, okay, man, I guess it comes in tapped, but Kabira Crossroads.
Yeah, not well. It comes in play tapped, but that doesn't matter.
Doesn't really make a difference when the deck is supposed to win with the Amulet anyway.
Yeah.
But it's
definitely way worse.
Yeah, you could still play the deck. It still would have been totally busted with Kabira Crossroads.
Yeah. That one card's not the...
It's like a one-up.
Burn was also way worse back then
because
it didn't have Swift Spear or Eidolon.
So that's always really interesting when you look at the different times of these bannings, that, you know, how aggressive do people get with their creativity?
So that's an interesting question, actually, that I just realized. At what point does Burn get a card banned?
It would have to be like Eidolon. Like, you couldn't ban a Burn part, because there's
your Goblin Guide.
Yeah, would banning Goblin Guide really fix the problem?
Like, well, I think the problem with Burn is card quality quantity.
Yeah.
Not necessarily card quality on a singular. Like, eventually just burn every standard, they're going to print a new interesting Burn card.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say 50% of the time, 50% of blocks will have that card be a modern playable Burn card. So, like,
you won't have
Battle for Zendikar didn't have one, but Khans had one.
What you won't have, which is strong to your point, is that you won't have a card. You won't have an Eidolon, because that's a very unique card, and you won't have an aggressive creature at the power level of Goblin Guide. So if you were going to have to make a banning decision, it would have to be one of those two cards. Because,
but like, look at a Tarkas Command or Boros Charm the year before. Like, almost every year, other than Battle for Zendikar, has had a Burn staple printed in it.
Yeah, but so the composition of that deck, to add to its redundancy with card quality, like, you have to print things at those same mana costs that are better than the things that exist.
Sure.
You can't really push the rate on those cards that much more than you have.
Like, but if every standard season needs a red deck, eventually, yeah. I feel like eventually you're just going to have, the deck is...
Maybe. What's the worst card that deck plays? Lava Spike?
Yeah.
Okay, so Lava Spike gets replaced eventually by the better version, like,
or something,
whatever that is.
Equally nuts, yeah.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing. I mean, it would be one of the two cards. It would be Eidolon or Guide, because I just don't think, the spells.
I guess my point is that Infect and Affinity are decks that, yes, once in a while there's an artifact theme or there's like a crazy pump spell that they print, but for the most part, the pieces that make those decks aren't like a consistent every year we're pushing some version of this.
Right.
Where, like, efficient damage dealing red cards is not only something they do every year, but it's the point of their color.
Yeah, I get that. So that was that's the last banning we've had, is the most recent banning. And of course, we now have another one on the horizon that we are pretty sure. So what is the specific ban prediction from Alex Kessler, the caller of shots, and the specific ban prediction over on my end?
I think it's just Iavugan.
You just think it's the one?
Yeah. Temple and Iavugan is what they would do if they wanted to kill the deck. I don't think Aaron Forsythe wants to do that. The only reason they would ban both is if they put some work and tested it and they figured the deck is still too good. I would say 100% Iavugan goes away.
Yeah.
60% chance Temple goes away, and like a 5% chance that Thought Not Seer gets kicked out.
Definitely not Thought Not Seer. No way. The only card that is going to get banned is going to be Iavugan. And the reason
and I'm with you.
The reason for that is, and for anybody, we've said this on a podcast before.
It's the one that lets you do a stupid thing.
The reason is because Eldrazi Temple can get you 2 mana on turn one. That's what it can get you. No, there's no way to make Eldrazi Temple get you more than 2 mana on turn one.
Which is really good. Iavugan,
if you have the right draw, can get you 8 mana on turn one.
Sure.
I mean, it can get you more than that, but like, it, with the cards the deck plays right now, you can lay Iavugan and play 4 Eldrazi Mimics. Like, that can just happen. And that's the reason you have to ban that card.
Sure. I don't disagree with you.
It makes Tron a little weaker.
Which is something that I think is a benefit.
My
complaint with Tron has always been not, oh no, they got a 7 drop, Karn on turn 3. Because that you can deal with. The problem with Tron is that eventually they're going to get Emrakul. So counterspell decks are terrible against them.
Right.
Like that, and if Tron was bad against counterspells, the deck is way more of a metagame piece instead of like, oh, this forces me to play Burn Storm, you know.
What do you think about the possibility of Forsythe maybe just saying to one of the people in testing, just saying, okay, look, I know we don't test for Modern, but before I make this decision, can you guys just like jam a lot of games with Tron running Thought Not Seer quickly and just see what happens? Because like, what if it turns out that all we're going to see is a switch where all of a sudden Tron starts jamming the good Eldrazi cards, and then Tron just becomes like the busted, slightly slower
like a workshop Tron where it's like all colorless cards and maybe splashing one color for green or something like that.
Like drawing Thought Not Seer at any point in the game or Reality Smasher, they're just not that bad. So like we're getting
with Reality Smasher, I think Reality Smasher is the one that goes away, because I think that in general, and Path to Exile is an example where this isn't true, in general, Wurmcrawl Engine is just better.
Right.
And for Tron, the difference in mana is the same.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Like, there's no point where they have five mana that they don't have seven.
Yeah, I get that,
Where Thought Knotseer offers something very different. Thought Knotseer is the discard spell factor to Thought Knotseer is a effect that they might be interested in, and plus playing a 4 and a 3 drop is more likely than playing a 5 and a 2 drop.
Yeah, I think that's true. Thought Knotseer is super busted.
Yeah, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if Thought Knotseer gets banned eventually. Yeah. I'm not saying it deserves to, but I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't think it'll be banned here.
No.
The real question, and I don't think it'll happen, but unbanning.
I mean, what would really... We talked about before on the list, like, this could be the moment where they unban Stoneforge.
The cards that I've come to think are worthy of being unbanned, not all of them, but one of the blue cantrips, most likely Ancestral Visions of the three. Just because it is really slow, there's no longer Twin. Like, one of the reasons that card was a problem was that Twin... If Twin exists, that card basically reads, suspend this, and whenever it goes off, you win.
Does Ancestral Vision, like, make some version of Living End just completely ridiculous? Like,
no, I mean...
That
deck is already all cantrips. Like, what does drawing three more 7/6s do?
I mean, I don't know, it's pretty good.
Sure.
Like, it's really good. You just, like, resolve one of your Cascade spells, and then you either go off or just draw three and keep going. I mean...
See, but I feel like it's worse than just going off.
Yeah,
I think they just want to go off
that's
every
fair.
Time.
I'm just wondering. Yeah. I was just thinking, like, what are the... I mean, Cascade is one of the things that makes that card a problem.
But Bloodbraid Elf isn't in the format.
Yeah, true.
That's another thing. Like, that's one of the other ones, Bloodbraid Elf. And we talked about already how I don't think Bloodbraid... I've come to realize why Bloodbraid Elf is good to stay banned. One of the reasons is Call Guns Command. Another reason is it does something there. I do think Bloodbraid Elf and Stoneforge at the same time is an interesting thing that... Because that causes the format to be put in this weird situation where you're...
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason to play Jund. There's a reason to play Junk. There's a reason to play Naya. There's a reason to play... Mardu. Like, all of the different... three color grindy versions now have an argument for, and like the reason Stoneforge Mystic seems like a card, and I don't think they're going to unban it on Monday, that sounds ridiculous, but the reason Stoneforge Mystic sounds like a card that might be interesting to unban is white is classically very weak in Modern now. Like, we've gone a long time since white was a very strong color, and if it is a strong color, it's normally in combination with other things as like a splash for Lingering Souls or Path.
It'll be fun this coming Monday when we get to stream the episode live.
Yeah.
It'll be post banning announcement and set review.
With review. Yeah.
That'll be really fun.
That'll be a fun episode. So remember, tune in next week.
We'll do it a little earlier than, well, you have no idea what time we record this, so never mind. We'll just announce it later.
It'll probably be between 7 and 8 p.m. next Monday.
Yeah. I was going to say just for me personally.
Start time.
Earlier. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe like 6 to 7, but we'll announce it for sure. So
keep an eye on Twitter.
Yeah. I think that pretty much does it.
We're at today.
Yeah, I tweeted something out at the beginning of the episode just from my personal account, and I got some pretty silly responses.
Sure.
I'm just gonna read.
Plus, we have our Batman versus Superman review that we have to talk about.
Are we gonna definitely do that?
Yeah, we have time.
Are we going to do that?
Yeah. And you have some Arnold. You have to say at least one out of every three of these in an Arnold voice.
No, I have like my lines I'll do that I like, but like, all right. So here's my favorite one.
What was the question?
The question was best MTG inspired pickup line PG-13.
Okay.
And my favorite was from Corey Anonymous, Knife City, said, "Is that an upkeep trigger, or are you just happy to see me?" And they said, "Did it hurt when the planes walked from Sunhome?" Did it hurt when you fell from heaven is what that's in reference to?
Yeah.
It's a really bad pickup line, but I got a chuckle out of it. Thank you, Corey.
I feel like a planes walk from, like, not Taiga, Savannah.
Oh, God, you're getting planes walk so from Savannah nerdy
it's
like a right planes. Now.
You're
getting so
and
nerdy.
Planes walking, so many layers. It's more layered than nerdy. Right?
Yeah.
I'm like an onion.
Yeah. Layers. All right. I thought Batman versus Superman didn't deserve 29%. I thought it deserved like a 58%.
Oh, I think that movie is garbage.
Yeah, like
58%. Oh, wait. All right. From this point on, spoilers for the Batman versus Superman movie that just came out.
This
for
is going to be like a 2
know,
minute discussion.
No, I'm going to read my rant that I posted on Facebook in the comments.
God.
It's not that long.
Yeah, spoilers if you guys don't want to hear. If you don't want to hear, remember to follow us on Twitter at the MMCast. Kessler's at Kess Wiley, and I'm at Ben Bayman Media. And of course, check our Patreon to help us make more content for you guys. There'll be an influx of content coming in April. A bunch of stuff because we
have. So just things on the schedule. Next Monday we're doing the live stream.
Yep.
Which we'll do live recording. I don't think there'll be video unless Patreon blows up in the next week.
Yep.
Keep an eye out for the mats that are being sent out. The thing that's being sent out for for April.
Yep.
A playset both of signed Geists and signed Spells. Not Spells Guides. That's crazy.
Grand Architects.
Grand Architects.
Wow. So each person gets a playset of both.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's if you pay $50 for 1 month, the first month you will guaranteed get a Masters of Modern specialized Patreon. So it says thank you. It is to you a Patreon subscriber, not just the normal one that you can buy at some point that we'll eventually make for sale. But this is like a specified one to you. You will get that sent to you. And it sounds like
for April specifically, you will get.
So if you've already done the mat, you'll be getting 4 Grand Architects and 4 Geists of St. Traffs, both signed by Kessler and Bateman, shipped to you. And that is the kind of thing we'll be doing.
I'm debating, and this may or may not happen because I have to figure out how to actually accomplish this. It also may, and this will be a mystery that you'll find out when receiving it, include a token, an angel token that'll probably feature both of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Spoilers out. Let's talk Batman vs. Superman. Thanks for checking in, guys.
Yeah. No, there's more. We also, the lore episode on Friday.
Oh.
That's a bonus episode we're doing next week.
We're doing the lore episode next week.
Or we're doing it next month. Okay. I'm going to say 90% chance next week, but based off of work schedules, it might be the next week. But for April, the special episode is lore.
I'll be there.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So, Batman versus Superman.
All right.
I thought it was a hot mess.
Okay, yeah, I agree. It wasn't like the kind of movies that get 29% to me on Rotten Tomatoes are like really piles. And like to me, this movie was like a mid-50s, high-50s, like a 58-59%, like above average, but like
it was not
good.
Above average.
If average is 5 to me, remember, 50% is average. So like on that scale, 50% is bad. So 50 in tomatoes percentages, to me, it's a bad movie.
A bad movie.
I think it had a lot more to offer than a lot of people are giving it credit for. I think I really liked Affleck as Batman. I liked Batman.
He was okay as Batman. I like the idea of Affleck as Batman, and this movie did not ruin Affleck as Batman for me, but nothing about this Batman was good.
He was cool to me.
He was a bad detective.
Gal Gadot's legs were amazing.
He was bad. He shot people.
He's awesome.
All the time. Batman doesn't shoot people.
Original Batman does. Or like back in the 40s.
Yeah, but that Batman had a gun.
Yeah. This Batman's ruthless. He does what has to get done.
No. Somebody, okay. Let me read some of the flaws of this movie. Where is it? All right. Spoilers. Why does either no one know who the Batman is and or doesn't care? Like the entire movie, we have Clark Kent spending the entire time trying to convince people, hey, we should cover this Batman, even though it's been established that he's been around for 40 years.
20 years. 20 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Tell me a news story that's been around for 20 years that you don't already just know about.
No, like I definitely agree with you. Like I noticed that too, that it was interesting that like Batman was breaking, but he had been in Gotham for 20 years.
What if Batman was successful in killing Superman, what was Lex Luthor's plan with Doomsday? What was he going to do?
Well, okay, on the Superman Doomsday plot point that I thought was ridiculous, I liked how they devoted 24 seconds of screen time to the U.S. government nuking space. They were like, oh, let's just ditch the transitions here. Flick a switch, shoot the nuke. And then also, he's the fastest being on Earth, but he won't dodge the nuke.
Also, wait.
And it'll be a direct hit.
Superman was winning. He basically won. He was kicking Doomsday off of Earth.
Yeah.
He was off.
Yep.
And then they fired a nuke, so Doomsday came back.
Yeah, that was terrible. And then also when Batman was like when it was Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman, and they were like facing Doomsday, it was like, okay, Wonder Woman can like take the blast, she's got the whip, and like Superman's like duking it out. It's like Batman's like jumping from scaffolds that are getting like disintegrated.
Well, he needed the sniper shot something. But why, okay, on the Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, that moment from the trailer where they're like, oh, is she with you?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she was with you. She was with Batman. Batman invited her in an email.
also, yeah, true. And also, though, we're forgetting the fact that this movie was completely humorless and had no sense of humor at all.
It's a comic book movie. It needs to be fun.
And that was the first time they tried to like inject any humor into the movie.
That was in the trailer and all of the trailers.
So flat.
Yeah. So flat. Why were there so many dreams? Why? There are like 30 dream sequences.
Yeah. That was bad. I liked how Lois Lane was like, well, this thing can kill Superman. I'll just toss
drop
it in the water.
It in a puddle.
And then also, without getting any confirmation or information on what this giant beast out there is, I just know that it's from Krypton and that I need to know. I need to now go get the kryptonite and get it to Superman. But I've just been hiding in this like little room the whole time. So I'm just assuming that I need the spear.
Why did Superman stop Batman from chasing down and hunting down terrorists and then just let the terrorists go? Can you answer that one?
You didn't have a huge problem with Martha being
No. I definitely had a problem with... Okay, I will give them credit. I never really put together that both of their moms were named Martha.
Me neither.
Never really thought about it. So congratulations, Zack Snyder, for informing me. Right. It shouldn't be the key moment that convinces Batman not to kill Superman for no arbitrary reason.
Best friends. Yeah, that was bad. I thought there was some cool stuff though. I agree with you. There was a lot of crap in this movie, but like I don't think it was as bad as you and a lot of other people are painting it.
Also, I'm done with seeing Batman kill his parents, or I'm seeing with Batman's parents die.
Did you like how from The Walking Dead that you don't watch Walking Dead?
No, not at all.
Okay, anybody who watches Walking Dead and is listening to this, that's Maggie and Negan. So. That's Maggie from the show and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who's about to play Negan and beat in Glenn's head next week at the end of the episode. My prediction. Spoiler.
Okay, sure. Walking Dead spoiler, apparently.
And that's his parents in this movie, which to me is hilarious. That like, what a bizarre coincidence.
Also, that dream sequence where they go into the future and the Flash like reminds you, if you don't know anything about comics, does it make sense?
Yes, from Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. Well, like, you see the future and Batman, Superman's like, oh, I'm evil now. And there's like aliens for no reason with any, or like demons.
I forgot. It was from Crisis, right? That was what that was.
Well,
supposed
to be. That's Darkseid's soldiers. And it's, Crisis on Infinite.
Yeah, that's
the
what
video
I thought.
Game is a reference. And then also, the Flash is time traveling. So it's like coming back in time immemorial.
Yeah, that's from original Crisis.
Sure. But if you don't know anything about, like, I'm a comic book nerd.
Yeah.
You're a comic book nerd.
Yeah.
You are a comic book nerd, specifically of Batman.
Yeah.
But to anyone else on the planet.
Yeah. It was really weird. Also.
That might be the reason you're okay with this movie and the rest of the world hates it, though.
Maybe.
You're seeing it from the perspective of, oh, I know the references and I'm enjoying the fact that we got to see the death of Superman. We got to see the, that moment. We got to see the Dark Knight Returns and we got to see all these classic comic books with like frame for frame shots brought to life, which is what Zack Snyder does. But
I'm gonna rant on Snyder just a second here. Did you, speaking of the dream sequence and did you like the Justice League trailer in the middle?
Oh yeah. When they just like went through each person and showed, I did like completely not recognize Cyborg's logo.
Me neither.
I was like, who's the C? Is that like Green Lantern Corpse? Is that a,
I haven't been paying attention to the development of the Justice League movie very much. And I was very surprised that they chose to use Cyborg.
I'm not, he's a
black.
He's the African-American representation on the Justice League. They've been pushing him really hard in comic book form.
Got it.
Recently.
Okay.
He was a Teen Titans character that was pretty successful. And so they moved him forward. He also has a unique power set that's different than everyone else. Kind of everyone else is a puncher or a thing. And he's like, I can hack into computers with my
arm. Cyborg a lot. Like I was a big fan of the entire first 3 years of Geoff Johns' Teen Titans. So like I was a fan, like I'm in,
sure.
But like, I just was surprised. I haven't been paying very close attention. So I didn't see that coming. As far as Zack Snyder goes, I've had this feeling about Zack Snyder since the beginning. So think about this. The first movie Zack Snyder directed was Watchmen. Even if he did a movie before that I'm forgetting.
300.
Sorry. That's what I meant to say. Not Watchmen. I meant to say 300.
Okay.
the first movie he directed was 300, and people loved 300. And if you go back and you watch 300, it's pretty awesome. It looks really... Just let me finish.
Yeah.
It looks really good, and he does what he does well. And the reason it worked so well was because you have the simplest story in the history of mankind. It's an outmatched army who has to go against a much bigger, much better, and more corrupt army.
It is a simpler movie than Mad Max.
Yeah, it is the simplest thing ever. And so that's, you get a bunch of like gruesome fight scenes and Gerard Butler and a bunch of abs, and like, that movie works. Here's the thing. When I saw Watchmen, and as a comic book fan who worked in comic book stores as a kid, that was my whole life. Like, Watchmen's our Bible. That was like, if you were a comic book fan, that was your thing.
And FYI, if the movie has turned you off from reading it, you should go read the Watchmen comic
book.
Watchmen's
amazing.
It's really good.
Every
movie, comic book movie, has some weird influence by that comic.
When I watched Watchmen in theaters, I remember thinking to myself, that was amazing. What an incredible shot-for-shot retelling of the comic book. Like, that was so accurate. But it didn't sit with me. I kind of walked away and I was just like, but it's not really that memorable. I've never had any desire to ever watch that movie again.
It's because it's
So this is what
it's watchable if it's on HBO and you have nothing else to do.
This is what Zack Snyder does. He is a like if you think about just a couple shots from this movie. You know that shot when Superman goes to save the day? I think it
yeah, all the shots with the flood,
Brazil,
and the when he's like, Day of the Dead. No, it was Mexico.
In Mexico,
Day of the Dead, and you have
and they're flocking to him like he's like a deity, and you're like, and you're sort of looking at, you're like, that's like a portrait that Snyder has in mind that he wants to put on screen.
Right. Like, and you have the like him saving the NASA rocket with the giant explosion behind him. No, Zack Snyder is very good at making a visual thing pretty, but
it almost is to the point that it's distracting from the story. Like you actually, he's not good at storytelling from a narrative standpoint. Like you don't pay attention and you don't care. I will stick to this. The best single scenes in either movie, Man of Steel or Batman vs. Superman, are the scenes when he's Clark and he's interacting with Kevin Costner as his dad. Those are the best scenes.
The scene from the first one where his dad dies is the dumbest moment in that movie.
See, now we're at odds because I love the Costner scenes from the first movie.
No. Kevin Costner, he's great. Fine. But that movie is so dumb. Like I'm going to let my dad die in a tornado because he wants to save a dog that I could literally save him right now without anyone noticing.
But
tell me how that makes sense.
I think we need to end the podcast.
We got time. The best thing about Kevin Costner, the best part about Superman's dad dying is it's supposed to be a heart attack because Superman can't beat that, excluding time travel Superman. But we're not talking about him.
Okay, let's put it to bed. We've talked about trash. I recommend you see it. It's a movie if you can see it in theaters because it's worth seeing in theaters rather.
I think
than
it's worth
video.
Seeing because it's really fun to complain about how terrible
and
it is.
And it looks in a lot of places it looks awesome.
Yeah, but the editing is awful and like the awesomeness that it looks is like the fights feel fake. Like, yeah. I don't like when they're like when Superman punches Batman, there's nothing ethereal about him. I'm just like,
I got really, really tired of just like gods hitting gods. Like, and the same thing happened in Man of Steel.
But like, I love watching the Hulk fight things.
Yeah.
I could watch the Hulk punch Iron Man all day. And like, I have problems with Age of Ultron, but like, that's probably the best scene. And it was in the trailer and I could still watch it again of just them fighting each other. Cause like, when the Hulk punches something, you feel it.
Yeah.
And this, when Superman punched something, you're just like, the world.
Yeah.
Just, you don't like nothing in this movie felt all real. Right. Yeah.
I'm calling it a day.
Okay.
We're wrapping it up.
All right.
All right.
I've been Alex Kessler.
I've been Ben Bateman.
And this has been the Masters of Modern Podcast plus what's the Batman review show we had?
Oh, Gotham's Finest.
Yeah, this is Gotham's Finest and Masters of Modern.
Yeah.
Doesn't that have a Twitter?
Yeah, I close the Twitter.
Close the Twitter. All right. So yeah. Follow the MM cast for both. Yeah. All right. Bye guys.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.